Welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is numerically broadcast number 200. Very interesting. And I'd really like to thank Jack Star Davies for being with us today. This is, of course, Jeff Wefferson coming at you from Magnetic Island, Queensland, whose indigenous name is Yunbanoon. But Jack Star, how are you? We've talked on the phone once before.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, it's very interesting to catch you when you're actually at home, because you're never you're never home.
Just for a short while, we've been screening the beautiful documentary film Awake, which is a dream from Standing Rock.
Yes. Hey, you know what? In honor of my love of Native Americans and my connection with them, let me play you a little song on my Native American flute really quick.
Oh, thank you.
So tell us.
Thank you so much. That was absolutely magical. Actually, my name in the Maori language is Ke Wo'o Te Whaia, which is mother of the first vibration, representing the sound of the flute.
Well, tell us about yourself. Who are you? Tell us about your background. If someone asked me about you, I would say, oh, she's this kind of an activist, international coordinator of various sort of cool activities. Other than that, I don't really know.
I would call myself a planetary warrior.
Are you from Australia?
You know, an activist, producer, presenter. Yeah, I've just been on a beautiful path. I sold my business here in Australia, caught up in the corporate world back, you know, almost 5.5, 6 years ago now.
What was that?
And went off on an incredible healing journey, which was just dedicated to listen to what my soul's mission really, really is. And through an incredible journey of traveling around to like 50 countries, I started getting more involved with film and more production, even though all my other businesses were always involved as a producer. This was leading into a different type of producer's role, where it was literally focusing on, you know, healing the planet in more of an activist type situation.
Yes.
And all, you know, last year was quite an intense year. First part of the year was definitely dedicated to protecting our oceans and getting out the right information out there when it came to, you know, our Australia's Great Barrier Reef, our dying coral reef. And then everything really shifted for me last year too, where I was having these very prolific dreams that was, you know, talking to eagles and dreams inside teepees and being met with elders. And it led me to Standing Rock, which is pretty much where majority of my time has been devoted, since September last year. This year has been focused on taking some time out, a little bit of time out to heal myself from this journey. I would definitely describe myself as someone that is absolutely committed to bringing information and truth forward to the public of what's really happening on the planet and how we can actually move forward to make positive changes, bringing them ideas or solutions or conversations around how we can actually work as a community to, you know, really make a positive change that we so desperately need on this planet right now.
Yes. Just as a matter of interest, what was your business that you sold 5 years ago? Is that film production?
I actually did lighting design, interior design for about 10 years. Funnily enough, I also had a laser clinic business. I've changed completely in this journey, in this huge healing journey, but I've always been involved in production since, you know, even since high school. So being like a project manager, producer, it just comes second nature to me.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. I got in touch with you, or vice versa, through our very dear friend Terry Lilly. I call him Mr. Limpet. I don't know if you ever saw that film with Don Knotts, but he's very much like the Mr. Limpet scientist, underwater photographer, marine biologist, and I love him, man. He's doing such fantastic work. But so tell us about how you met Terry and what you guys have done. You went to the Philippines.
Terry, I was actually in Hawaii, and funnily enough, I was hitchhiking, and a beautiful woman picked me up, and she ended up guiding me to an exhibition that evening, which was with Patrick Ching, who's he's an author and writer that talks about the oceans and how we can protect the oceans, but as in a children's book, he's also an illustrator as well, and he was doing a collaboration there with Terry Lilly, who was there talking about how we can protect the beautiful sea creatures and mammals all around the Hawaiian islands. And I already was very familiar with Terry's work, so I made myself, I introduced myself at this event, and we had a very strong spiritual connection. And in the islands of Kauai in particular, it really is an island of the manifestations and dreams. And without any phone communication whatsoever or any communication via Facebook or email, we just so happened to somehow communicate and meet up at the right places with the same intentions always, over and over and over again. And that led to us doing some filming together where we were sharing the Kumaliko, which is the Hawaiian hymn of creation. And what that is that really, it was written by Auntie Yubilat Johnson, who is one of the most well-respected Hawaiian elders from the Hawaiian University. And we were relating the story of the Kumalipo back in with Terry's work and working out how we've lost this disconnect with our precious Mother Earth and how the Hawaiians used to really connect in with the planet through this beautiful hymn of creation being the Kumalipo. And that led to us showing what's really happening now in real time with the Australian military and the US military being in a nuclear warfare game called RIMPAC, which was actually causing some devastating effects to our coral reef. And obviously, we heard in the media that the Great Barrier Reef is, we lost a lot of her last year due to climate change. But there's so much more that the public's not aware of, which has been suppressed for us, which is clearly related to the activity that the military were conducting.
Yes, that's one of my...
Terry and I did. Terry and I really, we explored this avenue, and what we wanted to do is we wanted to actually show a success story of a thriving coral reef that was actually once pretty much classified dead in the 70s. So we decided to take a trip over to Upo Island in the Philippines to actually showcase, a rejuvenated, thriving coral reef, which took about 40 years for that to, replenish herself. And that is, showing the world that there are solutions. We can make a positive impact when we actually work together and make decisions all across the board, meaning, to make an impact with the planet and actually achieve success where we are, going from dying coral reef to a positive coral reef. We really need to move forward all together as a team. That requires, a mayor, it requires a community, school teachers, students, marine biologists, fishermen, government. It requires everyone to be on the same page to make decisions moving forward to really protect a reef or anything that's an environmental contribution.
That's one of my main areas of focus, is the health of Mother Ocean. And what I try to look at is all the different contributing factors.
Yes.
And one of the major ones that is invisible to a lot of people for various reasons, a lot of them are psychological, is that people tend to not even question the existence or anything that the whole military-industrial juggernaut does, because I think without even, people have been brainwashed for generations to not question its existence, why it's okay for anything military to be exempt from environmental laws, all this kind of stuff, the astronomical amount of resources and waste that's consumed and it's just its existence, regardless of its functioning. And, you know, like RIMPAC and all these other war games and exercises that they have, this is basically equivalent to a form of war itself. I mean, to me, this is one of the most urgent issues on this whole planet right now, is looking at our effect, the anthropogenic impacts of our military-industrial civilization across the board, but especially in the ocean, because there's really only one ocean. I call her Mother Ocean. It's the cradle of life. So much of it is totally unknown to us, and it's so vast. The ocean represents a cubic volume of life that's astronomically orders of magnitude greater than where life lives on land. And there's areas that we don't even know what's there. But what we do know is the amount of contaminants that we're spewing into there. But like, for example, in terms of the military thing, one of my things that I try to keep on the radar a lot that we actually talked about in a phone conversation we had a couple of years ago was the global nuclear scenario. And how invisible this is, not only to our eyes and senses, but to the public radar. You know, and a lot of people think, oh, yeah, this is something from the past. Or I've even met people that think that even if the climate change scenario, as popularly portrayed, even if that was real, which I have a lot of questions about, but even if it was, that's absolutely nothing. Nothing compared to the global nuclear scenario. But who's talking about that? You know, it's a bit inconvenient. And when I was on the Big Island of Hawaii 4 years ago, I talked to a lot of people because Hawaii's right in the blast zone from Fukushima. The ocean currents go right there. And I go like, well, look, aren't you guys worried about, you know, some radioactive contaminants being here on from Fukushima on top of what's already there all around the world? And they and guess what a lot of people said? They go, oh, Hawaii's, it's surrounded by this magic bubble of protection. It's not going to hurt us. You know, and yes. I believe in metaphysical domains of reality. I believe in all kind of cool stuff, but I think that's kind of it's kind of a cop-out attitude to have.
Hi, Jeff, are you there?
Yes, I might have got terminated because I was talking about the nuclear scenario.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Well, you know what, you never know these days. There's a lot of weird activity that's going on, and, you know, everything's based on algorithms on their internet as well.
Absolutely. So it's computers.
Get put out there by, you know, people like you and I and Terry get taken down. It's, you know, we're not living in a protected world, even with our ways to be able to communicate. So It's interesting what's happening right now.
It's very interesting. I was just I reposted an article yesterday on Facebook from a year or two ago about how it was looking at the number of indigenous people and environmental activists that are murdered around the world every year. And it's growing exponentially. And then if you correlate that with some of the new NSA satellite drone assassination technologies that I think it could be real, you know. And again, it all operates on computers. It's not like a person's there steering it or anything like that. So it's a whole, it's beyond Brave New World.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean, I've experienced stuff myself, even up at Standing Rock, where everything was tampered with. So, it is.
Tell us about your experience there and why you think that seems to have made a really big impact on you. I think you have been involved with a film about that. So you spent how much time there?
Well, I went there in September. And I raised money to actually just build the dome and as the main gathering place for all the elders and all the chiefs. I could see that they really needed assistance there and a lot of help. And it was just an extremely rewarding and fulfilling experience just to connect back in with the elders in ceremony as well, to really understand their way, their prayer, being led by them every day. So it was very much a sacred camp right from the beginning. But it actually, you know, by the time the veterinaries came in, which was about 2,500 of them, along with the veterinaries that came in later on, which is sort of end of November, December, came a lot of infiltrators as well. So you really have to be, you know, on your game the entire time. But what I witnessed at the front lines as well was some of the most explicit, vulgar and horrific displays of assaults on these native Indians, including on their lands. And literally the only ones here that were breaking any rules whatsoever was obviously, you know, the government, the oil companies and military. And I tell you, it was just, it really opened my eyes to how horrific this, you know, the system really is.
Yes, but check this out. That's a long-standing American tradition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like here in Australia, but it's even more institutionalized there, I think.
Yes.
The, you know,
and I literally was only sleeping like 2 to 3 hours a night because I was rushing around playing all kinds of roles and assisting the elders and people on site there. But at the same time, there was nowhere else I could be. I was guided by spirit to be there from all of my dreams through all of my ceremonies, even ayahuasca ceremonies. Everything led to that moment of really helping the Indigenous have a voice. And I know that this is part of my mission. In anywhere it is across the world, I will be assisting in helping the Indigenous have a voice. You know, there was material that was sent out there to the rest of the world that was getting suppressed. And there was other people making ways to show the rest of the world real content that was happening. And that platform happened to become like Unify, which was like a world peace platform that the rest of the world could actually jump in and see things. But when you're talking about only like 2 million views, that's still a lot of views for the rest of the world to see. But when the whole world was watching, 2 million views is actually not really much at all. And that's because obviously everything was taken down and tampered with on our, you know, internet connections, so nobody could really see the truth. So what's happening right now is Digital Smoke Signals, which is one of the largest Indigenous media voices that existed up there at Standing Rock, put together a documentary called Awake. Now, this was a complete labor of love. They had no really financial input to actually make this happen. So they joined forces with another director, and they actually submitted Awake, a dream from Standing Rock, which came from an Indigenous voice, which I think is very important as well, that our documentaries just don't come from, you know, white man's perspective. We put the camera and the eye back into their hands to tell their story, which I think is very important in any type of, you know, situation like this. And they actually submitted this documentary to Sundance Film Festival, and it was denied. So they were trying to work out how they could best get this documentary out there as soon as possible to be able to have an impact around the world and actually show the world what really happened up there.
Yes.
So right now, currently, there is a permanent Indigenous forum at the United Nations in New York City. And that is from the 24th of April to the 5th of May. And during that period, anyone can jump online and actually watch this film. It's called Awake, a dream from Standing Rock. But to be able to get it online, you look up awakethefilm.org and you make a small donation, as small as a dollar. All of those monies go towards the Indigenous Media Fund. And basically you'll get a real insight into and what happened up there. The thing is, this film's only available online by looking that up, awakethefilm.org, until the 5th of May when the Indigenous Forum is over at the United Nations.
Yes.
And right now what's happening up at the United Nations is that many of these natives from all different reservations and nations around North America are coming to present in front of the United Nations as short as 3 minutes just to actually share a story and to share their stories of the assaults that are happening to their territories and to their peoples.
I have a lot of reservations about the UN myself, but I think it's good to get all this stuff on people's radar. But one of my things that I thought a lot about when I was witnessing the Standing Rock thing and how much attention it was getting and all the people and stuff, I went like, but ultimately, it's a good example of a lot of things, but one of those things is that what we call civilization is hopelessly addicted to hydrocarbon fuels. which is one of the precious substances that we dig from the land in violation of the Hopi prophecy, which is something I talk about a lot. And it seems to me that the way to make an even bigger impact in a way that might matter more would be to focus on not one specific example of a pipeline crossing indigenous land that's going to destroy the water, but pulling back and look at how much that exact kind of thing is happening all over the planet all the time, and how everyone who drives a car, everyone who lives in this civilization, we're all partaking of a quote-unquote economy that's based on hydrocarbons. We all are. Everything that we have, everything is shipped, transported. I mean, we couldn't have civilization if it weren't for this. So how do we get out of this? I mean, it seems, this is too big for people to even think about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I did a screening last night here in our community at Bondi, and we had a full house, and we had a huge response because a friend of mine is actually got an incredible idea where every Tuesday they're showcasing a documentary or film that is bringing forth real information that is, you know, people really need to hear. Last Tuesday they showed the documentary Time for Change, and last night was Awake. And the response from the community was like huge. I mean, people are really wanting to know how can they assist. And I believe to be able to put the right solutions in place and move forward, we require leaders and change makers to come together in forum to come up with an action plan in so many ways. Well, because yes, we can all share information on social media, but there has to be more of a game plan. And to tell you the truth, the only person that I really truly feel that has a real game plan that can actually make a real difference and put a little story on the map to make this change is Michael Tellinger. Are you familiar with Michael Tellinger from the Ubuntu movement in South Africa?
No.
You definitely have to look this man up. He has a story called One Small Town. And if you look up One Small Town by Michael Tellinger, he has a concept there that could really help a whole community work together harmoniously with the system, but in their favor. And I feel like, you know, we keep coming up against these, you know, laws which don't serve us, and they're made change. You know, it's not there at all to support us. And if you look this man up, Michael Tellinger, he's one of the only guys I've ever spoken to that actually literally has a proper game plan.
Yes.
I mean, we went to Standing Rock and we served as water protectors, but did we really have a plan at the end of the day? And to go through that experience where at one point, you know, where Obama was in office, you know, it came to December where they announced a victory, which was only really a month up our sleeve to really defend the land again as water protectors. But that victory was no victory. It was just a moment where they were allowing that time for an environmental impact report to be done. And then obviously throughout that period, you know, Trump's come into office later and has just, you know, said, no, we're going ahead. But the devastation to some of these natives that I witnessed, and even to myself, I mean, I was in tears because we knew how much effort we put in there to protect our precious mother, and just for that to be just taken away so easily with the sign of a document. And I mean, it's horrific. There's voices out there right now that need to be heard, and you know, your radio station and what you're doing is brilliant, and every one of us are definitely courageous planetary warriors.
Very good. Well, you tied in with something that is very important to me. You said there's a lot of voices out there that need to be heard, and I think the majority of these are non-human voices. The voices of, and maybe to use the word voice is anthropogenic, anthropocentric, but the voices of all the non-human life forms, I use the word voice metaphorically, that live on this planet, that have equal right to exist, that are equally important as us, but yet humanity seems to be almost exclusively wrapped up in itself and its own importance. And I really think that working on ways to change this, to sort of help achieve an escape velocity for our thought that can get us out of only thinking about ourselves all the time. Because, you know, if we pull back and look at the impacts that our species is having, whereas no other species on this planet is doing anything even remotely like us, yet we have the audacity to call ourselves man the wise, and we use the word intelligence to refer to us, and we question if anybody else has it. And I really think that Mother Earth, as much as she loves all of her children, I really think that she is seriously evaluating our existence here now, because we're just, if you look at the sum total of all the stuff we're doing, and a lot of that is the military-industrial juggernaut that most people have no idea of the vastness of its existence, its, the resources that it creates, where it is, what it does. And this is just by existing. This is not even if it's trying to wage war or blow anything up. You know, so people don't even know about that. And when we look at that, we're actually waging war on Mother Earth. And
yes.
I just really think that this is the frame of reference that we need to start looking at with all this stuff. You know, we can't just worry about how people are going to help your little community and stuff, because our community is Mother Earth.
That's right.
You know, and to me, I'm saying stuff that's not popular and that people don't really want to hear. I think for us to actually stop doing most of what we're doing would be the single greatest contribution that we can make. Pull back on all of our impacts and consumption of resources, and I think so much of films and stuff and media, it serves the purpose of making people feel good about themselves, but ultimately it ends up being more like a form of entertainment than it does education or actually provoking or inspiring people to actually make changes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I believe that in anything that you produce, it should have a call to action at the end of it. So people aren't just left there sitting, okay, great, we just watched a documentary film. You need to guide people and advise them, okay, what is the action we take now? Because without that, yes, you're right, people do see it, they hear about it, they're educated, but they literally don't take any form of action whatsoever. And it really does take a driving force, a leader, to make these type of actions happen, and also to make sure that they are fulfilled and followed through to the end to start to make change. I mean, I was part of an action with a group of people protecting our Pilliga forest down in New South Wales.
Yes, I was just I was up there.
Santos is, you know, proposing this gas
field
activity and production to happen, which would actually devastate thousands of hectares of our forest and also contaminate billions of clean water.
Yes, when I was visiting my astronomer friends in Coonabarabran, Malcolm and Laura Hartley, they're very deeply involved in that Pilliga activism awareness thing too. It's a vast area there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So where does that stand right now? They said, this was a couple of months ago, they released a major multiple volume environmental impact statement that but then they extended the deadline for people to still oppose it.
Well, basically, where it stands at the moment is they actually asked for the public a public response before anything was to move forward. So we created an action on Sunday, and you know, basically, not only this will cause more trauma to the regional Aboriginal community, because the area of impact is crucially important to the spiritual, cultural, and social life of the Gimalare people. And so not only this, it's also, you know, it's affecting an Aboriginal community again. So here we are faced with not only Indigenous territories, but Indigenous peoples. So, you know, there's so much of the general public have absolutely no idea what's going on. And so as we gathered there with drumming and in celebration as community came together, I went around to every single person I could possibly talk to until it got dark, signing, getting signatures to put together a campaign to obviously, you know, oppose this this suggestion or submission to the Narrabri gas EIS. So it was interesting to get the public's opinion and feedback. I spoke to some people that were sitting there only 2 hours away from the, 2 minutes away from the action, that could hear what was going on, but really had no intention to actually even ask any questions of why we were gathering. And as I wanted to, you know, get their signatures, they were like, look, please don't interrupt our Sunday. We don't want to talk about any coal mines or gas companies or anything like that. So there's still this huge level of ignorance, and, you know, people are so asleep. But then there was others that were so open to wanting to know what everything was about, the whole action, and were more than happy to sign their lives away in support of opposing this, you know, this plan of another assault on our precious Mother Earth.
Yes. Well, I saw another. To me, I look at a lot of this stuff as, when you look at it from a planetary perspective, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a giant gaping amputated limb that's been blown off or something. But another small sign of hope was that I saw an article from the Deep Sea Mining Campaign yesterday where the Apple Computer Corporation in its 2017 environmental report has come out and proclaimed that they're not going to support the global mining industry anymore, that they think that there's other ways of getting the materials they need to continue to manufacture computers from recycling and other sources. So the deep seabed mining people thought that this was a very good sign, that this was going to be hopefully a nail in the coffin of the first deep seabed mine project that's scheduled to take place later this year off of Papua New Guinea. Go ahead.
I guess what people don't realize with this whole with the Pilliga is that, you know, this will extract over 35 billion liters of toxic groundwater. And much of this will happen in the first 5 years if this is to go ahead. And all of this water will be treated in the early years, will generate 10,000 of tons of salt. And there is no safe disposal plan for this at all. Not only that, they will clear close to 1,000 hectares of the Pilliga forest, fragmenting the largest temperate woodland in New South Wales, which is home to so many unique wildlife. You know, it would cause significant diversion of water from a recharge aquifer of the Great Artesian Basin, and which is a water resource relied upon by rural communities across Western Australia and Western New South Wales. And obviously this leads to a deliberate and fugitive emissions of methane, adding to the climate change. I mean, it's huge. Not only the trauma to the Aboriginals, but none of it's justified. And Santos' own coal seam gas export activities in Queensland, they've caused gas prices to rise and supply to become unpredictable. So it's like, you know, I guess there's no one in the general public that really even understand the significance of this. And so how do we get this information out there that can be heard for everyone to take action? It's like this constant battle that we face.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. What kind of action could people take?
Okay, so at the moment, there is a written submission opposing the Narrabri Coal Seam Gas Project, and there are copies that we were handing out around on Sunday. You can actually write into an executive director from the resource assessment. This is for the Department of Planning and Environment, and there's a GPO box 39, Sydney, New South Wales, 2001. Your letter would oppose the Narrabri Coal Seam Gas Project. But apart from that, what we really need to do is create content out there through media that we can share through our social media resources to help people take action. But even in doing all this type of activity as well, it takes resources and it takes money. So most activists out there who are really doing everything they possibly can, it's a labor of love. There's not much money in it. Nobody receives any money for this type of work. I would say majority receives no money for this work whatsoever. So it feels like the ones that are really doing the hard work that is super necessary right now, because we are at a critical time, a lot of these type of people are, you know, they're they're not suffering, but they're
struggling.
They're literally living off the smell of an oily rag to make this happen.
Absolutely. I know the feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes it tough. But the thing is, at the same time, there's a driving force and a spirit that is so large and so rich that keeps the momentum and the passion alive to really want to make this positive change. Because we're not these people that are out there doing this, and I am absolutely one of these, to make this change, I'm driven by a passion to live in a healthy, beautiful environment, free from suffering and disease, living in, in harmony with our Mother Earth. And I'm, absolutely not driven by money or materialism. So, we find ourselves in this situation where, somehow we're just managing to make it work, but there's, there's not always resources that we need to make this movement happen.
Yes. Well, do you ever ask the question of how much of what humanity is doing now at a planetary level is actually, its very existence is detrimental for every other living thing here? Or another question I would ask that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, how has our species actually been of benefit to Mother Earth versus what we've taken and done that's destructive? How have we helped this planet by being here? I'm asking it as a serious question.
Yeah. Well, I truly believe now, as we know, like, the planet, our mother, will always be fine. She has the capacity to heal herself over, which is already, which is happening. But for the human race, we, if we continue at the degree of assault and destruction on our precious mother, it's the human race that will be lost. We are in a critical time right now with climate change that, if we don't start implementing these new renewable energy resources and ways to have sustainable communities, then in 20 years' time, I tell you that we'll be in a very, very critical position where we won't have the clean water that's available to support a population around the planet that we need. And this type of information is people are not aware of it. I find that the assault through war and through pollutants and these huge big gas companies and oil companies that are driven by nothing but greed and money it's like a fast track right now. This extraction business in regards to like crude oil, this is a dying industry. And it's like everything that's happening right now feels like it's on fast forward so they can absolutely milk our precious mother for all of her resources. But as we know, this is leading to so much environmental impact through crazy type of weather conditions, crazy type of flooding, and all different kinds of, weird. My mother Earth, she's crying out. She's crying out to say, I'm hurting. Like, please assist me. And I feel like, even from as an Australian, I feel like Australians approach it as in, it'll be all right, mate. Well, it's actually not going to be all right unless we actually stand together and be conscious of our decisions now. I feel like this human race has not really had a good impact at all.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that back in the days when we were only indigenous people, then we were able to live in harmony with the earth, but it's so complex now. Even a lot of the quote-unquote indigenous people of today, whether they're First Nations Australians, First Nations Americans, they might be claiming that they're indigenous people, but if you look at how they live, it's the same as everybody else. They've got their four-wheel drives and their mobile phones and their microwave ovens and all the stuff, so there's not really a distinction anymore. There are still people living maybe in the Amazon and places like that are still truly indigenous, but they're being decimated day by day. And
yes.
The way I look at it is there is no them. There is no evil them that we can point fingers at, whether it's the military or the oil companies, because they, even with all the computers and stuff, it's still ultimately people that are doing this stuff, and we're all people. And plus, the regular people work for these companies. I mean, you know, and it's not the CEOs or the generals or the admirals that are doing the damage. Most of them never dug a hole or pulled a trigger anyway. They're like administrative bureaucrats giving the orders. But I think from the perspective of Mother Earth, she's looking at all of us as members of the same species. We're one species out of many, many billions on of her children right now. We're only in our mind, only in our delusional mental operating environment do we exist in a separate reality from everybody else. Only in our minds are we better and above, more intelligent than and more important than everybody else. But I don't think that that's really how it is. And to me, what I just said is one of the biggest things that I'm working on in my educational and activism work, especially with respect to the whales and dolphins and the health of Mother Ocean, is trying to look at ourselves as other species might perceive us. And I think that, you know, getting outside of the trap of the limited human reality that all of our beliefs and decision making is guided from within, if we can expand this horizon of identity to see that we aren't just ourselves in our individual body, we aren't just our family, we aren't just our human community, we aren't just our species, but we actually are integral parts of the family of all of life on Mother Earth. And maybe even in a vaster cosmic context, but we just don't know. You know, it's like a, you know, there's one of my very favorite quotes is from Adlai Stevenson from 1964. It's where he first introduced the concept of spaceship Earth. But he closes it by, I'll paraphrase it, he says that no craft can travel safely unless they resolve the vast contradictions that plague us. And this was in 1964, but you see, contradictions. It's like, you know, we're shooting ourselves in the foot, you know, by so much of what we do. Well, it's like the gardener, while planting one plant, he steps on a flower and kills it, you know? So it's like, how to resolve these contradictions. And I think, you know, the thing you're talking about, awareness and education and getting stuff on people's radar, that's where we're very much on the same page with all of this stuff. But you mentioned a project, well, I guess it's a project that you called Water is Life. What is that?
Water is life. It's you know, there's so much happening right now, particularly over in the U.S. obviously since Standing Rock, which has created this incredible momentum around the world, that, you know, there's action teams that are coming together to create solutions, educating children through, you know, preschool, primary school, high school about the importance of water is life. There is other action teams going out there to spread this awareness through conscious festivals, which is, I feel, is a very, very important part of this education to other people that haven't awakened as of yet. And I feel that, you know, as a triple Pisces, as a moon rising, sun rising, ascending Pisces with a grand water trine in my chart, I'm absolutely here to protect the water in any which way. And, you know, we have some ideas at the moment together to put together another production which is really focused on water. And I, you know, that's definitely part of my mission. So I'm involved in a lot of different communities around the world where we can actually share resources and information to distribute information out there the best way possible, because we're in a place in a time right now where we have the technology to really, you know, speak to one another, but we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just need to know who's on our team, where we all are supporting one another, and to really share the information, you know, the right way, which can be digestible for, you know, a normal citizen that thinks that this whole system is the way that they should be living.
Yes.
And I, you know, I'm dedicated to this. And right now, you know, my vision is to, you know, I guess share a little bit of my story as well with the general public here and even Australia before I leave, knowing that I'm loved and supported, because this type of work is, this type of work that you and I do and like Terry does, it is, you know, it's courageous and it can be tough, and we need to know that we need to feel supported and we need to know and be supportive of, you know, other game changers as well.
Yes. Well, something I wanted to emphasize is that, like, right now where I am on Magnetic Island, I'm just off near the Great Barrier Reef. Mm-hmm. And what Terry and I and Stuart Simonson have really been talking about a lot over the past year, and it may relate to some of your work with Terry too. Terry's made it clear that he reckons that because of existing environmental regulations that still exist in America, which I think that they're not nearly as strong as they could be or ever were, but there still are impediments to the military being able to just have total carte blanche to do any kind of environmental destruction that it wants. And again, this is dependent on whether people would actually see or know about what they were doing anyway. But to the extent that we can, he reckons that there's a major shift going on right now because, and in part because of what he was able to make happen by exposing the damage that the Navy microwave technology was doing on the reefs there off of Kauai, forced their hand and got them to move further offshore, which is good for that area. But now he reckons that in general, and there's already been a big push to come down here anyway as part of the Pacific pivot, but that all these undersea warfare activities are now going to be taking place in the waters of Australia and New Zealand because, A, it's easy to keep it invisible, and B, there are no of these similar environmental regulations down here. So yeah. A big thing that I'm embarking on now is trying to create awareness about this, and I've been really trying to seek out any Great Barrier Reef researchers who might be on this kind of page. Because, see, what we're up against is that so many of these people have been totally brainwashed by the giant climate change propaganda campaign, which has been one of the most pervasive and successful sort of meme warfare operations ever to exist. And yes. People think that that's the root and the cause of everything. And it's not. I mean, I keep having to point out to people very essential scientific and logical flaws in that entire scenario. But the main thing I say is that even if all the climate change stuff that they say, even if that was true, it's not going to cause cancer. It's not a mutagen. It's not a teratogen. It's not carbon dioxide. It's not a carcinogen or a poison. You know, and so all this stuff, people don't realize what the global nuclear scenario is, or what now we have underwater microwave technologies for all the submarines and stuff like that. But we're working on trying to map out how all this is happening in the Great Barrier Reef area. And I spent a lot of time in New Zealand too, and mapping out how a lot of the U.S. military stuff is going down there now. And in fact, they just had U.S. warships that came to Auckland last November for the first time in 30 years. And on the exact day when they were going to do this war game in Auckland Harbor, there was this giant 7.8 earthquake down off of Kaikoura. And it was just all a bit too much of a coincidence. But I just, you know, to say, so you said you're leaving Australia. I mean, you're gone a lot anyway, but to me, to try to protect and preserve the relative pristinity of the marine environment around Australia and New Zealand is something very much worth fighting for.
Oh, it's very much worth fighting for, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, Terry is really a critical instigator and influencer with this information. He really, truly is. I mean, he's one guy that has had absolute years and decades of experiencing of showing the correlation of and doing a comparative research project of the dying coral reefs around the world, and can actually bring this connection between Australia and New Zealand. So we need to try and, you know, connect into some of these, you know, scientists and marine biologists and others in Australia and New Zealand to show this, because, yeah, I mean, people aren't aware of anything, including, you know, when I started talking about this early last year, I literally felt like a lot of people felt that I was
wearing your tinfoil hat.
Information I brought forward.
Absolutely. But people have been conditioned to think that about this kind of stuff. This is conspiracy theory, don't you know?
Yeah.
But it's anything. People think anything that they don't get from mainstream media is conspiracy theory. But we'll see. But look, we have to get Terry down here. I mean, I'm trying to get on to some of these scientists at this very minute. Did you know that three James Cook University graduate students are there studying with Terry now about the electromagnetic and microwave effects on the corals?
Hmm.
And so they're trying to put me in touch with some of their friends here, because the military is, especially its undersea activity, it's everywhere around the world, but it's completely invisible. We aren't allowed to know where they are. You know, and if we have instrumentation, which Stuart and Terry and I were talking about developing, instrumentation that we can put in the water to actually measure the intensity and the energetic components of these energy weapons that they're using, then we become the de facto enemy, because we have the ability to do that. And that's the military, one of the main things they do is prevent anybody else from knowing what they're doing.
Yes, yes. And the thing is, the other thing is that, you know, there is that safety issue with those that are bringing this information forward, because, you know, as we know, that even, you know, Terry's life was threatened on numerous occasions. And so we have to be aware of this, you know. We need that love and support from around to know that we are safe, to be able to bring this, like, truth, you know, to the surface. And Terry's work is, I mean, now that he's actually made these huge changes and we know that the coral reefs are now growing back around the island of Kauai, that is an absolute accomplishment. It's just huge. And I'm in absolute honor and appreciation of his work. It's taken a lot of effort and courage. And, you know, I've been there and I've seen it with him. And so whatever we can do, wherever we can make these connections, I'm open for suggestions. And, yeah, let's see what we can make happen.
Yes, I think it's really interesting and so powerful that he's demonstrated that when the Navy moved their microwaves away, that the coral reefs began to regenerate very, very powerfully, like unexpectedly powerfully. And I use the same metaphor for the human presence on Mother Earth. Like, you know, if a person is sick, if you can find out what it is that's making you sick and get rid of that cause, then your healing process can get a toehold and you've got a profound ability to heal yourself. But as long as the cause of the illness is there or undiagnosed, the healing process is sort of held at bay. And I sort of look at the whole presence of our military-industrial civilization all around the planet, under the sea and in the air and in space and everywhere, that in itself is sort of a major cause of the illness of Mother Earth. And only when that is largely gone is Mother Earth really going to have a chance to recover and heal. You know, that's kind of a really scary thought, but in the past 2 or 3 years, it started to kind of loom on my radar that might be what's going to have to happen. Because, to be totally honest, I think that a lot of the technological and military stuff, it's so far off the rail on such a grand scale and so pervasive and deliberately embedded so as to make itself indestructible, I don't think we could shut this stuff down even if we wanted to. I think it's beyond our control, and I think Mother Earth is going to have to go to the next level. As the Hopi Native Americans say, she has done three times before in order to cleanse, to heal the earth of Kuyanaskatsi. The only way that's possible is through what they call the Day of Purification. You know, you probably know the Hopi prophecy, but, you know, yes. Mother Earth cleanses herself through stuff that we really aren't going to like. And it could be a variety of natural disasters and catastrophes. It may be forms that we have no idea about, but, you know, I really think that that's the gravity of the situation where we find ourselves right now.
Yeah, I mean, it just baffles me. The whole thing just baffles me to think that this continuous assault exists on a daily basis. And I mean, and in regards to ourselves, not just from Mother Earth's point of view, I feel like every single one of us that has loved ones, has someone close to us that has cancer, that has some type of disease or ailment that we have no answers for. And this is a huge contributing factor. And, you know, for me, even with my father, he's had many operations recently through various types of cancers. And, you know, I'm just done with it. I'm wanting a beautiful, harmoniously healthy living. And in actual fact, it's really not that hard. But to get this message across seems like we are constantly fighting this huge battle. But I guess the thing that we need to stay strong with is that we continue with the faith and the knowing that we can do this.
Yes.
When we focus on the positive, and rather than on the negative, sometimes this is where we, you know, our thoughts are so powerful, our words are so powerful, that we want to actualize this harmonious relationship with our planet and one another through the positive reaction, ridding ourselves of the fear.
Yes.
And this is how we will, you know, really transform in a more rapid approach.
Well, let's hope so. I'd like to close the show in this last minute with the words of Thomas Bunyakya, who was the Hopi elder I met in 1986 there at Big Mountain. He said that there's no way we're going to forestall the day of purification. And I don't think that talking about Mother Earth cleansing herself, that's not negative, and it's not something we should be afraid of. It's inevitable, you know, and whether or not we alone are responsible for its necessity or not, we don't really know. But he said there's no way we're going to keep it from happening, but through maintaining our highest karma and dharma and doing our best in every way, exactly what you're talking about, we can hope to lessen the severity of the purification, which might mean lessening the impact on all the life forms that are already suffering because of what humanity is doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have a closing statement for the last 30 seconds?
I would just love everyone to, you know, sink into their beautiful, beautiful paths and dig deep, knowing that, you know, we are one family, we are one voice, we are one heart, and, you know, when we unite, we can literally move mountains and make positive change. And I've witnessed it, I've felt it, and I really want to focus on the positive, to know that, you know, we can make this beautiful life together. It's happening right now. The momentum is absolutely happening, and I feel it through my veins. I feel it in my heart, and it's a pleasure to speak with you today, knowing that there's another brother that's doing whatever he possibly can to live, help us live in this beautiful planet Earth that we exist on.
Well, thank you so much. That means a lot, and I hope I get to meet you in person one of these days. Thank you, Jackstar Davies. This is Jeff Weberson signing off for On the Brink Radio.
Thank you.